All right. Hello, everybody. We are beginning now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 135A. And getting everything in order here. Yes. Here are the picture of our seven continents, and we've been reviewing the different groupings on our planet, the five world centers at this time, the seven continents, three of whom have these five world centers, others do not, the division of the globe into two hemispheres, which have been given rays, the Occident and the Orient, rays 2 and 4 for the Occident, rays 4 and 3 for the Orient, respectively soul and personality rays. And we've looked at another threefold division of three groupings, the countries Russia, the USA, and the entire British Empire, which is not a nation. And then we've looked at the nations of the world and their most important cities. All of these are considered to be centers that are ruled by certain rays and planets. We have now, we've been looking at modes of research here as well. And the modes of research are into the centers of man, the centers having to do with nations and land masses. And now the idea of the research continues with research into the relation of the planetary centers to systemic centers, the sacred planets and the energies pouring through them from the constellations which they rule in the esoteric sense. So this is the next consideration of the research to be done. As he said, there's so much research that can enter into this question of the relationship of all these planetary centers to human centers and to extra planetary or systemic centers, and even perhaps to zodiacal centers. This is one of the paradoxes of occultism, he tells us. But it can be understood if the student remembers that the centers in the etheric body rule the planet insofar as they are receptive or non-receptive to the influences emanating from the planet via the planetary centers. So, as I've said before, rulership is not necessarily domination. There is that kind of rulership also, but rulership means a control over how much of a superior energy or force reaches centers which are lower than the ruler in this esoteric sense. So DK says it is an occult paradox, and indeed it is, because usually we think of the idea of a ruler being overpowering or more powerful than the subject which is ruled. But in this case, the ruler is weaker, but somehow resonantly attuned to the greater source which it rules and determines the degree of flow from that greater source, determines the focalization of energy from that greater source. In astrological rulership of this kind, not all of the energy of the Lord of the Constellation can reach lower focal points, and the ruler somehow reduces the amount of energy that can reach the lower focal points and transmits the energies of the greater source. Just as Mars, a lesser lord, simply a planetary lord, transmits the energies of Aries, the lord of a constellation, or Venus rules or transmits the energies of Taurus, not in their entirety, but partially. Beginning as ever with the study of the microcosm as the clue to the macrocosm, but seeking at the same time to envisage the macrocosm in order to understand the microcosm. We do both. We work both ways. Man will someday establish an intelligent relation to the whole of which he is a part, and this with conscious cooperation. Right now we're simply learning about this variegated wholeness in which we play our part, learning about these ones in whom we live and move and have our being. We do live and move and have our being within the planetary logos and also within greater being still, within the solar logos and so forth. Thus, the higher mind and the lower mind, the abstract and the concrete, the subjective and the objective, will be brought into a functioning whole. And this will be spiritual and material integration. And gradually, this is occurring. Okay. I cannot give you the relation of the planetary centers to the human centers, or of the systemic centers to the planets, okay? He is stopping here and saying, well, he can suggest, but he cannot fully give. Too much knowledge would be given too soon and prior to the time when there is enough love present in human nature to offset the possible misuse of energy with its often disastrous consequences. Well, the human centers, the chakras, we are speculating about these, of course. We are relating the chakras somewhat to the systemic centers, and he has given us ways of doing this. And the planetary centers in all their different varieties, we can somehow see their connection, their ray connection, and sometimes there's a zodiacal connection, even when they are not given, and sometimes their planetary connection. So the systemic centers involve other planets, and what he's calling here planetary centers involve centers of force within our planetary scheme and chain and our globe. He's brought it down to that level. Some of the correlations exist, but they are not confirmed. Okay, so let's say some correlations exist, and they are not confirmed. But we can offer educated guesses, speculations. For instance, we do have, let's say we have these cities that they transmit the first ray, London, Darjeeling, Tokyo. We know that to some extent they must be connected with first-ray centers within hierarchy and also with Shambhala. We also can relate them to the head center in the human being. And we can relate to the first-ray planets in the system, for instance, Vulcan and Pluto. And it may be that when we look at various of these centers, let's just say London, we are told that it exhibits the first ray in its building aspect and not in its destructive aspect. Therefore, we would expect it to be related in some way to Vulcan. Its soul ray is ray 5, and its soul sign is Leo, which is ruled by the sun and possibly veiling Vulcan. It has a constructive aspect to it, and Vulcan is the first ray indicator, which, though it has some destructive potentials, yes, it has the constructive side emphasized over Pluto. Pluto would not be the ruler. Maybe for a first-rate center like Tokyo, which is emphasizing the first ray, or did, in its materialistic aspect, the factor of the destroyer would be much stronger. And Japan has its soul ray, connected with Scorpio. And Scorpio is ruled by Pluto. Also, Darjeeling, another first ray center, is said to be expressing Scorpionic energy, so perhaps Pluto, in terms of a systemic energy, would be found there. There are ways to pursue, maybe in an intelligent manner, and through the law of analogy, some of the ways in which systemic centers may be related. Interestingly enough, we have Leo as the ruler of Geneva, considered as a world center. And again, we're going to have a sun rulership. What will be the planet involved? Will it be Vulcan again, or will it be the heart of the sun in some way involving Neptune? If we know more about the city itself and the function that it not only plays but is meant to play in the world, we can have a better guess concerning the systemic centers which may be involved. So all of this one day could be laid out, but the Tibetan promises more of this in the future. And in the third installment of his teaching, I expect that there will be a movement both towards the first ray and the third ray, that it will get more practical and more occult at the same time. We have another 12 years or so before this is happening, or begins to happen. And we have a lot of assimilating work to do. The colors, the mathematical rates of higher vibrations which emanate from the centers, so it tells you something very occult here. There are colors that can be seen, I suppose, by the clairvoyants and the masters. The mathematical rate of higher vibrations which emanate from the centers, individual, planetary, and systemic, and the quality, esoterically understood, of the energies must be the subject of human research and self-ascertained. So these are the things we should be looking for. Color, quality, rate of vibration. How we would ever measure rate of vibration at this time from the energies emanating from the planetary or systemic centers, I don't know. Maybe from the individual centers in the individual human etheric body, something more along that line could be gathered, and then maybe generalized in some way, octavized, generalized, towards the still greater centers. So there is a lot of information still being withheld. Some of it is information related to the secrets of initiation, and others, I think, simply information which it would not be wise to spread too widely at this time, of rampant selfishness in the human family. The clues and the hints have been given in the Ageless Wisdom. The slower method of research is safer at present. Okay. So these are very occult indications. In the next century and early in the century, Alice Bailey, I think, appeared early in the century. Some people might think it has to be at the stroke of midnight or somehow when the year 2000 occurs, or somehow in the early, very first years of the century. Not necessarily. Alice Bailey's work began in 1919 with the Tibetan, and it was still to be considered early. Even the conclave of 25 will be relatively early in the century. An initiate will appear and carry on their teaching. Okay. This is a reference which is frequently used. To justify the coming forth of all kinds of things purportedly by the Tibetan that may be good enough in its own way, but and it may be the product of an intelligent mind, somewhat illumined, but it's not the master speaking. We would recognize that the mathematical rate of the higher vibrations which emanate from the centers, the correlations would not be that which a human being would give or which a human being could confirm. It will be under the same impression, for my task is not yet completed, and this series of bridging treatises between the material knowledge of man and the science of the initiates has still another phase to run. Another phase. So, however the Tibetan chooses to do this, the information will be given under his impression, for my, and that means him, his task is not yet completed. Not yet completed. But the remainder of this century must be dedicated to the rebuilding of the shrine of man's living. I spent so much time, you know, in the Arcane School in the early days for me, and this is something that Mary Bailey would emphasize often. That was in the 1980s for me, and it was just, if you think about it, maybe only 30 years after the work with Alice Bailey had been completed at her death in 1949. And here we are now, some 30-something years later, rebuilding the shrine of man's living so that a human idealism, which is shared by many, can emerge, not a separative idealism, but similar values can become the object of a broad human, or it's the elevated, of an elevated, inclusive human idealism. To reconstructing the form of humanity's life, and maybe much of that has been done in places, to reconstituting the new civilization upon the foundations of the old, and to the organizing of the structures of the world thought, world politics, plus the redistribution of the world's resources in conformity to divine purpose, then and only then will it be possible to carry the revelation further. And the question is, has this been done? And can the revelation be carried further? The year given for the continuation of the revelation, at least in astrology, is approximately the year 2025. We have, in some places, reconstituted the new civilization upon the foundations of the old, but in some ways, it's not an entirely new civilization. We have, in many respects, reorganized the structures of world thought. There's far more instant internationalism, I would say. Now we have more instant inter. We can be there. We can witness what is occurring as it is occurring through our telecommunication systems. We still have selfish world politics. We are in the midst of the redistribution, I would say, of the world's resources. We are in. Are in the midst of this redistribution. And some who are having resources taken from them, or at least in the quantity that they're used to using, find this a difficult time. They fear for their future. Others have hope for their future. Before there can be right distribution, there's certainly, well, let's just say that redistribution is part of right distribution. This is our entry into the Aquarian Age. We only have to use the analogy of the circulatory system in the human body. If the blood were not widely and equally distributed, not entirely equally, but at least if the blood did not reach all organs of the body, there would be a threat to the entire system, because there would be ill health in certain areas of the body, and that ill health would be communicated to other areas. If there's a poisoning in one part of the system, and that part is connected with the circulatory system, that poisoning will be carried everywhere. So, you know, we have mixed results here. There have been attempts to certainly reconstitute the consciousness of humanity. Many efforts have been made. Many efforts made to widen the consciousness of humanity. And the New Group of World Servers is very active. And there are all kinds of movements towards human betterment and towards human spiritual betterment. I think the masters can see this, and their vision spans centuries, and we are not in the best position, perhaps, to evaluate as they can evaluate. Has enough been done so that this can be fulfilled? Then and only then will it be possible to carry the revelation further. I oftentimes say, well, by the year 2025, the Tibetan should be emerging, someone or in some method should be receiving that impression. It will have to be, I suppose, a responsible person. I doubt that it's economical to try to find a responsive group. There has to be an amanuensis, I suspect, and the amanuensis will be far better equipped with computer technology to bring through the revelation, I think, in more rapidly. And but there will have to be a team, I'm sure, for the distribution of this revelation. And we will look for this revelation from that year onward. Meanwhile, we are doing what we can here to make sure that this tremendous teaching is assimilated to the degree possible. And when I assess the assimilation of the teaching, of course, one tends to be idealistic about it and to hope that it could be more assimilated than it is, but I think the masters are in a position to judge whether the assimilation has been adequate. From my own perspective, it always looks incomplete. It always looks like more could be assimilated and in a better manner. And so it is for this reason that I find myself working with students who are committed, that's the ideal, to assimilate and apply as much of the Tibetan's teaching as may be possible. I think there's been a pretty good assimilation in the area of esoteric astrology, but it's among the few. But still, they can reach out to others. Esoteric psychology, I think, has been quite well assimilated in some quarters. White magic, there's work on that as well. The rays and the initiations, people continue to work at it. Esoteric healing, I think, a reasonable assimilation given what can be expected of humanity that cannot yet fully interpret the healing formulas nor apply them. I think among a certain group there has been a reasonable assimilation. It could always be more, it could always be deeper. We're making choices all the time, aren't we, about whether we apply ourselves to the assimilation and application of the great teaching, or whether we interest ourselves in other things which are perhaps of lesser value. Every individual will have to determine this for himself. All this is dependent upon the triumph of the forces of light and the consequent victory of those who stand for human freedom. Obviously, at this point, that triumph had not occurred. So at least we know that this material was written before the end of World War II. If the forces of materialism and cruelty triumph, and selfish and wicked national interests and ambitions had prevailed, the revelation would still come, but very much later. Let's see, when did he tell us that the series of bridging treatises here, 2025, astrology. There's a place, and it looks like it is in esoteric astrology, and it's, let's see, 2025, around the year 2025. Well, this is coming a little bit later in this book. We're about another 50 pages or so, or 55 pages, something like that, almost 60 pages. So this is the anticipation that I can, however, attempt to give you certain concepts and relationships and parallels which may serve to close this section on astrology and lay the foundation for future teaching around the year 2025. And the implication is that it will be teaching on astrology and, I suppose, whatever other aspects of the ageless wisdom DK deems to be required. And, of course, he has his permission from his own superiors and chiefs, Master KH and the Christ. And, finally, I think Sanat Kumara has to give the final permission for what can go forth. So if they had triumphed, now that's the question of when this was written, the revelation would still come. This is interesting, had prevailed. The revelation would still have come, but very much later. The revelation would still come, but very much later. The issue is not in the balance, and there is no need to despair. The courage of those fighting for freedom remains unimpaired. The hierarchy stands. The light is breaking in the world as the realities of the situation emerge more clearly. So it seems that this is written during some phase of the war. Is it written before 1942 when there was almost a need for the hierarchy to withdraw? Probably if a very careful account had been kept of the writings as they came out, obviously in installments, we would be able to know. Right now, maybe we don't, but DK in this particular section seems to be looking forward to a victory, I would say. Here it seems he is anticipating a victory for the forces of light. Fire of love, forces of light. Forces of light. Okay. Be of good cheer, for there is no true defeat of the human spirit. There is no final extinction. There can be a temporary extinction, I guess, of the divine in man, for divinity ever rises triumphant from the darkest pit of hell. It's dramatic and poetic language, and he is very good at giving exhortations which bring inspiration to us. Occasionally we do need that. We have a great abundance of information, but occasionally he needs to speak to the aspiring nature. There is need, however, to overcome the inertia of the material nature in response to human need. Individually and by nations not engrossed with the essentials of the situation, the inertia of the material nature in response to human need. This shows signs of happening, shows signs. There is no power on earth which can prevent the advance of man towards his destined goal, and no combinations of powers can hold him back. So he didn't really go so deeply in this section. he outlined what could be the subject of this section, but did not really give the correlations which he said would amount to giving too much information. Too much information. And it is up to us and our research to discover what these correlations may be. So let's see here. Yes, the research into the relation of the planetary centers to the systemic centers, the sacred planets, and the energies pouring through them from the constellations which they rule in the esoteric sense. Now, in a way, we have more information under our eye at this time than the receivers of those, than those who received the information in installments. We do have more information now. And perhaps some of these correlations can be made, but it's a question of what is needed to be made. That is the before us. It's possible to learn everything about everything, and if there's no application, obviously the purpose of the learning has been derailed, or it has been prevented. It has become futile. So learning without application, obviously, a certain amount of it has to be, of course. There's much that we have to learn that we cannot immediately apply, but it sets the framework of thought for an intelligent apprehension of those things we learn which can be rightly applied. Now we're entering a new section. It's Chapter 5, the three major constellations of the zodiac. And I suppose, what was it, Chapter 3? If we go back here to page 404 and approximately, or page 407, that's Chapter 3. Now, let's see, Chapter 4. Let's see if we can find that. Four, and that's the sacred and the non-sacred planets. That begins at 503. So now we're into another large chapter. And the large chapter will be concerned here with the three major constellations of the zodiac, to which we've given already quite a bit of attention. There exists at this time an interrelation between three of the constellations upon which I would like somewhat to enlarge. Let's see if they are the three that we have been giving attention to, because their potency and the climax of the interrelation is being reached at this time. From 1975 on, the potency will greatly lessen until it fades out. Well, here we are, 38 years afterwards. This is now written 38 years after 1975. The period of this interplay of three major energies and their focused, potent effect upon our planet began in 1875, achieved momentum in 1945, and will reach its highest expression for good or evil in 1945, and then will slowly decline until 1975. All right, I see how he's doing this. It's not the three super constellations. It's those zodiacal constellations which receive energy from the super constellations, namely Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius. So, approximately 100 years, these three appear to be having a cycle of approximately 100 years. And now, when he talks about will reach its highest expression for good or evil, we see that this material is written before the end of the war. So, in a way, there was definitely the desirable outcome. And the forces of light did triumph, and we have to ensure that they continue to triumph, as I say, the it's kind of a third phase of the war being fought out subjectively at the moment. Some have felt that whatever Armageddon really means has already occurred with World War II. Others, looking forward to the challenges humanity now faces, may wonder whether the third phase of the war is now occurring and whether the war really ended in 1945. Certainly the chance was there to rebuild the shrine of man's living and to reconstruct the new civilization on the foundation of the old. In embryo, that civilization does exist, and I think sometimes we can see very rapid movement towards the new, which has been building up subjectively but has not been fully expressed. But when the pressure within is sufficient, the outer circumstances can occur rapidly because the preparation has been there. So the three constellations, these three constellations are Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces. And we recall how the descent goes because we've studied this extensively, haven't we? We go from the Great Bear to Leo to Saturn to Shambhala to the individual head center to the individual base of spine. We go from the Pleiades to Capricorn to Mercury to humanity to the Ajna center to the throat center. And in this case, humanity takes its place as the Ajna center within the planetary logos, even though that Ajna center position is reserved for the new group of world servers in relation to Sanakumara. With Pisces, we have the line of energy from Sirius to Pisces to Uranus to the hierarchy to the heart center of the individual and thence to the solar plexus. So that's what we've been studying and extensively. But I, considering how he wrote about them, I find it curious and interesting that the period of this interplay of the three major energies and their focused, potent effect upon our planet will decline until 1975. He made them seem so very, very important, and the kinds of things that they rule seem very important as well. So we have to wonder. See, the three constellations themselves, of course, continue to have strong effect, but this is an interplay. So let us just say that triangles increase and decrease in potency. Really, the interplay between the three points of a triangle increases or decreases in potency. So let's see what is to have been accomplished by these three, and whether we still see signs that something is being accomplished in relation to Leo, Capricorn, Pisces, and of course the triangle beneath them, in a way, Saturn, Mercury, and Uranus. These are curiously and most mysteriously related to the fourth kingdom in nature, and therefore to the evolution and destiny of the human family. So, let's see what he means. Add to these the emerging energy of Aquarius, and you have four energies which are playing upon the vehicles of men and producing peculiar effects, both destructive and constructive. Let us list them. Leo, Capricorn, Pisces, and of course, Aquarius. Interesting here that we have an opposition between Leo and Aquarius, and we have contiguous signs of Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces, which are three signs of summation. So Leo related to humanity and three signs of summation, three, which are contiguous, adjacent to each other. Twice before has this relation and intensification of vibration occurred. Aha. Well, we have to know something about these cycles that allow us to see when the great zodiacal interactions may have occurred. DK can read the planetary history. One day it may be possible for us to do the same. At the time of the coming of the sons of mind to the earth during the Lemurian age. So that's number one, right? And that is some 21 million years ago. So let's say some 21 million years ago. And the sons of mind, the sons of mind in a way can be looked at as the solar angels, and we became in a way sons of mind through the individualization process, and then also and once in the Atlantean period. And number two, once in the Atlantean period at the climax of the conflict between the lords of the dark face and the lords of the shining countenance. And when did that climactic war occur? Well, if I don't misquote Philip Lindsay, who is the scholar in this respect, I believe the about 4 million years ago. And or possibly, maybe it's the same, the fourth root subrace of the fourth root race. So we're dealing more with the third root race of the third subrace of the third root race for the first, and the fourth of the fourth for the second. So we're being advised here to see Volume 2 of The Secret Doctrine or the Vishnu Purana, where the great wisdom is stored. Our planetary history need not remain a secret, nor do we human beings have to remain forever in ignorance of that which actually did occur. Okay, in the earlier activity, the fourth active constellation was Gemini. Yes, and in the Atlantean period, it was Sagittarius. So Gemini, Sagittarius, and Aquarius represent three associated constellations. And so let us put them down here again. The first one is Leo, Capricorn, Pisces, and this will be Gemini. And this is Lemuria. And we know how important it was, how much Gemini related to the individualization process along with Leo. Then in the Atlantean period, we had Leo again, Capricorn, Pisces, and Sagittarius. And this was in the Atlantean period. I suppose this had something to do with redirecting the focus of the astral body and raising it towards the possibility of mental focus so that initiation could begin. And now, Leo, Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces with Aquarius. And I think before we have talked about the relationship now, Aryan times. We've talked about the relationship between Gemini, Sagittarius, and Aquarius. Well, certainly Gemini, Sagittarius, and Leo. Under Sagittarius, the arrows shot forth from the bow and the solar angels attached themselves to or became associated with the animal man. I would say that Sagittarius was also important in the Lemurian period, but obviously not particularly at the moment when this particular triangle was the focus. Now, it's interesting. Only 100 years? And in the past, did we have a 100-year period at each of these specified moments? Maybe, and maybe that tells us something about the acuity of our time. Of course, the individualization process lasted well, or, you know, something 5,000 years or maybe longer, but we're told that there was movement from between the two signs, Leo and Gemini, and we could assume that's approximately a 5,000-year period. The time of the Great War, I don't think it took that many years. So maybe we cannot say with certainty whether a particular period of years is involved. But the climax of the conflict probably went on over a long period of time. And in each case, we'd have to see how... we'd have to see how the particular triangle is involved. In Lemurian times, one can imagine the Capricorn for the founding of humanity was important, but of course Leo is the sign of individualization. When we're dealing with the Atlantean period, perhaps the astral condition was most important. Pisces seems to have a lot to do with that, but then Capricorn is the one who crosses the waters, and one can begin to emerge into self-conscious responsibility under Leo. Probably each one of these constellations means something different at the time. Now we have the wide-scale emergence of the human individual. We have humanity under Capricorn being prepared for initiation. And we have the coming of the hierarchy in closer proximity. The hierarchy was not present at the exact moment of individualization, something like 3 million years later. Or 2.5 million. One can throw around these words like million as if one really understands what they mean. But of course, we're dealing with vast periods of time. When it came to the final conflict, the hierarchy, though perhaps victorious in a sense, was not sufficiently victorious to remain in close contact with humanity, and there was a slow withdrawal and the need for human beings to aspire towards that which is hidden. The presentation of the mysteries, I suppose, continued. But the overt guidance of humanity by hierarchy was discontinued. And now the hierarchy returns under Aquarius, which is the sign which very much rules the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. In different modes of their activity, they are ruled by different signs. The effect was then on the physical plane, and the earliest was on the mental, and the great flood eventuated to which the Bible bears testimony. So in the Atlantean period, the effect was upon the physical plane, and in the early days of individualization, the main change was the association of the spark of mind with the mental unit of the human being, stimulating that to abnormal activity. It brought about the destruction of the humanity of the time, but released the indwelling life for further experience and development. And this idea of further experience and development suggests Sagittarius, the ongoing quest. And experience and development, well, Sagittarius brings in the fourth ray, did it at that time, I don't know, but brings in the fourth ray, experience and the experimentation, that's the fifth ray. So this is a very important triangle, and it showed up at great crises in the human human history and development. So we have to feel that our particular time on this planet is of equal importance to individualization, the founding of the fourth kingdom of nature on our globe and chain, and then the great destruction of the flood, by far the greatest destruction of all, probably because of the astral polarization of our planetary logos and even the astral polarization of our solar logos. The astral body is the strongest, and it correlates to water, so destruction of a great majority of humanity probably. But some, of course, there had to remain. There had to be continuity. And now here we are. We think of those great times in the past as being really climactic, really dramatic, stupendous in their effect on humanity and the planet. But maybe we are living through just such a time now, and we don't quite realize it until it happens. Well, it is happening at the moment. So here we have Leo, Capricorn, Pisces. The effects produced are mass effects. And the rulers of these constellations which move into activity at this time are those listed in one of the earlier tabulations which I gave you. He seems to think that it is important enough to repeat what he gave, I thought, quite extensively earlier. With Leo, here, the sun is the ruler. Maybe he's going to take these as constellations, regardless of their interplay. Taking these now as constellations, perhaps regardless of their interplay in the triangle mentioned, perhaps. Now, hierarchically at least, the sun is the ruler veiling Uranus, the planet of occultism, and that which governs group relations, organizations, and the 11th house. And it relates the Leo influence to Aquarius via Uranus. Interesting about Uranus and group relations. So Saturn represents often the isolated individual, and Leo can represent, Uranus can represent the group, organizations, and the 11th house. So when we look to the 11th house, one of the meanings there is organizations, maybe a little different than the kind of organizations we have in the 10th house, which are more part of the power structure, and as we understand the 11th house being the kind of creativity and advancement when there is a sufficient power structure indicated at the 10th house. He's dealing here with hierarchical rulers, really, isn't he? Note here that we are dealing with hierarchical rulers. Okay. The next comes Capricorn. The hierarchical ruler is Venus. It governs the second house, which is concerned with economics and the distribution of money and metals, and which rules Taurus, the seed house of illumination and the new emerging light. So here Venus also rules Libra exoterically and the seventh house, where enemies are recognized and unions and friendships achieved. It's a very practical description of these houses by DK. He obviously knows his exoteric astrology as well as the esoteric astrology, and I think astrologers would do well to just bring this into their consciousness, open enemies and recognized unions and friendships on a one-to-one basis are there achieved. Not just marriages and partnerships, but friendships as well. I like here this description, the seed house of illumination. Notice that through Venus, he takes in two other signs and their houses. So here, DK takes in through the rulership of Venus two other signs and their associated houses. We've been dealing with the houses which are what mundanely oriented, as it were. We've been dealing with the non-sacred planets and the houses they rule, but here we're dealing with sacred planets and the houses they rule. And these are hierarchical rulers as well. So the seed house of illumination, this is where we can find the growth of the light of wisdom through Taurus and through the second house until we really know what is of value. And finally, he develops this further. I imagine he has to go to Pisces. And the ruler is Pluto, and of course it is hierarchical again, governing the eighth house, the house of, he called it death and major separations, but now he elaborates, death, dissolution of detachment, ruling Scorpio, the sign of testing and discipleship. And he called it before the house of death and major separations. So there is a cleaving quality to Pluto. And that even though these are hierarchical rulers, he simply relates them to houses. There are no other, well, he could, couldn't he? He could relate this to the 12th house. Of course, Pisces does correlate with the 12th house, Capricorn with the 10th house, and Leo with the 5th house. So, let's just say here that the 5th house is implicated. And under Capricorn, the 10th house is implicated. And under Pisces, the 12th house. The 12th house is implicated. So the relations continue. This tabulation and its inferred relationships warrant careful study in the light of modern affairs and the present world situation. So we have here, you know, the contention between groups. We have the open enemies. We have the mineral kingdom and money being a sub-theme in the war, material aggression, and the desire for the possessions of others, the economic aspects. Even the neutral countries had to deal economically with Germany, let us say. We have under Leo the organizations which have organized around ideals, and these ideals may be contending ideals. We have the growth of the individual consciousness and the dictatorial consciousness. The leaders come in under Uranus, full of confidence in their own inner determinations. And with Pisces, we have death, dissolution, the end of many aspects of the old age, and it does continue to fall apart. So many of the world religions at the moment, three in particular, are still Piscean religions, and disintegration of those religions is due, maybe with the best elements in them being somehow salvaged to contribute to the new world religion. Certainly we cannot escape the idea of death and destruction in the period in which this was written, and even today there are potentials for destruction which perhaps are being held somewhat in check and in balance by the hierarchy, lest they prove overwhelming to humanity. We wonder how much the hierarchy is actually free to do. So this tabulation and its inferred relationships warrant careful study in the light of modern affairs and the present world situation. The hierarchy is emerging, but it cannot emerge unless certain things are cleared away. DK refers to the impossibility of human progress if things had remained as they were before the First World War. And I suppose it's really one world war, with the clearing of the obstacles involved, where Pluto is certainly involved in this clearing of the obstacles. We need a new economic system. So much of war is based upon the principle of acquisition, and justifying that acquisition from others in unlawful ways through the difference in the ideals that one holds compared to what they hold as ideals. And then the question of self-importance and wide control, and which groups will be dominant. seen here under the Leo rulership, the sign of dictators and those in authority and the groups that they lead. As I said, there was so much in Nazism that related to Leo, Hitler's chart being powerful in Leo, shambolic in a certain sense, Saturn and Leo in the 10th house, and also his soul was strongly under Leo, we have been told, by the Tibetan, and then the Nazi Party itself came to power in Aquarius in January 30th of 1933. And there's much concern with the National Socialistic Movement that came in under Aquarius. Sometimes the early manifestations of even such a promising sign as Aquarius have negative implications for humanity. One looks at the great standardization which can occur, the great leveling of distinction which can occur under Aquarius. So they are important, these signs. They warrant careful study from the angle of the ray energies involved and seeking to control human life. You have the influence of the seventh ray of ceremonial magic, which is the veiled Uranus, the fifth ray of concrete knowledge or science, distributed by Venus, and the first ray of will by Pluto, unitedly bringing about fundamental changes in ushering in the new era, okay, maybe aura two. So ray seven, ray five, ray one. Not ray three in this case. This combination is terrifically potent. I'm remembering he talked about Taurus quite a bit, didn't he, in relation to Vulcan and Venus and the Earth, and there it was ray one, five, and three. Here the third ray is missing, and there the seventh ray was missing. This combination is terrifically potent and brings about the precipitation of inner forces and increased activity of the lower mind. So the precipitation of inner forces, let's call that ray seven, an increased activity of the lower mind, let's call that ray five, and an outpouring of the Shambhala force, ray one, Aries, Pluto, Shambhala. Pluto having much to do with Shambhala in its destructive mode, all three of which can be seen functioning in the field of planetary life today as never before. All right, I think what we can do now, we'll go on to the next part. This will be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 135A page. I always look for the pages and don't always find them. I suppose page 539. And beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure 135B, page 539. So we'll take that up shortly.